Ladies and gentlemen, welcome along here tonight to our Landmarks History Lecture. If you're interested in coming along, I think there's a piece of paper at the back. We have an email database that I send the invitations out to people. When I remember, and I was a little bit late this month, I'm sorry. But if you would like to, our speaker this evening is Neil Chambers. Welcome, Neil. Lovely to have you here. Neil is probably well known to many of you. He owns Kauponga Station in Havelock North, and that property has a long and very interesting history. I know because Ewan McGregor, my husband, has been working with Neil to write the history, because although it says 1909 up there, this year is your centenary, I think, Neil.
Of the house.
So without further ado, I'll welcome Neil to come forward and speak to us.
I'm just going to make a quick introduction about the story, because now I'm very familiar with conversation. Didn't know very much about it at all, because even though it's at the back doorstep of Havelock North, it's rather secluded. And Kauponga is a branch of the land holding of the Chambers family. It's one of the most innovative families, I just won't even say farming families, innovative families in Zealand's history. The original Chambers, John Chambers, started the first hydro power scheme in the British Empire, and believe it or not, still operational. It's the oldest hydro power scheme that's operational in the world. It's right at the back door on the other side of the Tukituki River. They're very innovative in their technology and in their land use. First commercial winery, exotic forest. Anyway, this is the story of one branch of that family. Kauponga Station was settled in 1909 by Solomon Chambers. He lost his life at Gallipoli, and tragic loss, but he left a great legacy. So I'm going to go through just images, which is just a very small fraction of the images that were targeted for the book, which is pretty much the formatter, and it'll be a prompt for Neil to tell you this great story of Kauponga Station.
Well, that's John Chambers, who came out from Australia, originally from Hereford in England, and he came out and he made a lot of money in Victoria in the gold mines, not as a gold digger, but making the tools for the gold diggers. And he came out here in 1853 and took up the Mokopeka block and Tamata, and ended up with around about 18,000 acres stretching from the Maitotra to the Heriheri stream in Havelock North. And that's my great-grandparents, Thomas Mason Chambers and his wife Margaret. I'm not sure when that was taken, but it obviously at Tauroa by the look of it. That's the original map of Kauponga. Unfortunately, it should be up the other way, but it used to go right back down here to the Tukituk River. My father, in 1946, there was a fair amount of debt on Kauponga owing to the loss of my grandfather and dealing with my grandmother, and he actually sold off the back 1,000 acres in 1946, which he sold to David Orton. Selwyn Chambers as a young man, and then heading off to the war, or when he was in the Wellington Expeditionary Forces. I think I'm right in saying in peacetime he is the youngest officer to reach the rank of major in the history of the New Zealand Army. I think I'm correct in saying that, and I can't remember, we worked it out. He was made a major in 1914, beginning of 1914, or it might have been August 1914. And that's me. You and I went out the back. That's the Maori pa at the back of Kauponga, known as Te Cod Kauponga pa. Written about by a number of authors, including Buck Buchanan, who was once headmaster of Heriworth. Patrick Parsons is writing a little bit in my book about it. It was never ever a pa that the Maoris lived in. Patrick's had several looks at it, and it was a pa that was built as a retreat. And on three sides, it's actually very steep. I mean, you can get a motorbike up the front, but you can't get a motorbike over the back. And as kids, we would go up there, and there were all these rocks about that size, and we had a lot of fun throwing them down the hill. And I told Patrick about it, and he said, well, that was the ammunition. When you're looking at that from here on the left, it's not very far down to a very good water supply. And I know if I was a Maori and I wanted to defend myself, I'd rather be on the top throwing rocks down than coming up with some form of weapon. That's the look of Kauponga going back. I don't know where Ewan's quite dug that one up from, but looking at part of the hills and the Kauponga landscape, or the Chambers family landscape. Little cottage, built in 1909. In actual fact, that was when my grandfather took over, and there's another one, I think, coming up of the stables, which was the first building built in 1909, and that little cottage was completed in 1910. And there it is there. And there's the stables. All brick, sadly. It's deteriorated to a point where it's not worth spending any money on. It's all old lime mortar, and all the mortar in it, unfortunately, is rotting away. And what do you do with a building like that? Spend $50,000 on it to preserve it, or forget about it? And somebody wants to restore it, they're more than welcome to, but I'm certainly not going to. My grandparents, on their wedding day, I'm not quite sure who they all are, we did work out some of them. That's Bernard Chambers, who was the first cousin of my grandfather, and my grandmother, she was Violet Hall from Scarborough, which is now Seddon. Louis Hay, the architect of Kauponga. There's been quite a number of stories written about Kauponga and Louis Hay, all fairly brief. My grandfather, unfortunately, had a number of rows with him, as I understand most people who employed Louis Hay as an architect did. Certainly, as Peter Shaw says in his book, probably as an up-and-coming young architect, the job of building Kauponga was a major, major job for him. It was his biggest private contract at the time. But he certainly made a remarkable job and very, very well-designed house for the period of time. Construction of the house, you can see all the framing in it, two stories. We do know from my grandfather's diaries that he was still sorting out the plans in September 2013, and you think that 9,000 square feet of concrete house was completed at the end of October, beginning of November 1914. You know, in a year, two bullock teams, 2 yards of shingle from the Tukituk River, hauled up, those whole buggers knew how to work. And the cost of building the house then was, well, a brief to Louis Hay from my grandfather was, I want a substantial ferro cement house for £1,500. Well, he got a substantial house, but it was £2,500, and then there was a big row over the cost of it. But to think that they carved all that shingle from the river, all done by hand. They had a big concrete mixer apparently there, but no one even happened to that. That's a photograph taken of the hill behind the house. You can see the stables in the corner and the cottage, and then the start of Kauponga. And I would imagine that photograph was probably taken in the autumn of 1914. And there it is. That's when they got to there, or that's when they put the date on it. He was, of course, very keen on his military activities and was a member of the New Zealand Expeditionary Forces, the Wellington Mounted Rifles. There's another one down at Takapau. And that's one, obviously, inspecting the troops somewhere that Ewan's dug up from somewhere. It's amazing what Ewan's produced out of the woodwork. For me, it's been a very interesting exercise because there's a lot of little bits and pieces that suddenly I found out about, and I'm actually very glad that it is now being officially recorded. And there he is, Major Selwyn Chambers on his horse, Sir Henry Havelock, that was presented to him by the children of the primary school in Havelock North. And I have just, you may have seen it in the paper about a month ago, presented the photograph back to the school after 100 years. It ended up in Jack Chambers' hands, and then I got hold of it. And for 100 years we've actually given it back to the school, which I think is now in its appropriate place. And there's another one you and dug up from somewhere. Oh, Algy Rainbow's taken that photo. And the troops going off. There they are, that must be boarding somewhere. 9-10 ships, I think, took off, and my grandfather sailed on the Urari on the 16th of October, 1914. There's another one of the fleet. As I say, there were 10 of them. There's quite a vivid description in one of the books of the troop ships sailing out, one of my grandfather's diaries, where they all are there. They spent a lot of time in Egypt training, and then suddenly the horses were put aside, and his diary relating to the time in Egypt talks about doing bayonet training, and obviously they were training for Gallipoli, or for foot warfare rather than horse warfare. And 4 horses came back to New Zealand, 3 ended up at Tunanui, and the most famous one, Bess, ended up on a Wilson property over in Bulls. And my understanding is that a lot of the horses were actually shot to stop the Arabs getting hold of them because of the way they treated their animals. True or false, I'm not sure. An old photograph that I found in the safe, I knew it was there for quite a number of years, and I actually spoke to Roger Maroney about the photograph and said, oh, you might be interested in it for Anzac Day. That is on the 23rd of December 1914 with the entire expeditionary forces riding through Cairo, and we have found a diary with a very, very accurate and vivid description of that march of the expeditionary forces going through Cairo. Anzac Cove, I've been there. When you look at that road, there was no road there then, And when you think where they landed those poor soldiers, boy oh boy, they had a task ahead of them. Very, very brave men. They were meant to land in Silver Bay, further around the corner where it's nice and flat, but they got it wrong. And there was a little bit of Anzac Cove at Koponga when I was there. I grabbed a handful of pebbles off Anzac Cove, so here we are. Those pebbles were picked up down about there. I can even remember picking them up. That's in Gallipoli at number 2 outpost, which my grandfather so gallantly defended. And Ewan had a Beamish, Beauchop, and my grandfather saw one. Oh, now that's just the letter that was written to my great-grandfather. So I think that letter is self-explanatory. Here's his service certificate that came back from all the servicemen were presented with that on death. I've also got my other grandfather's certificate. He was killed in France in 1917. Yes, 17 or 18. Daughter Kate at the end of the beach where they've got the memorial of Ataturk and his immortal words about your soldiers are our soldiers. I can't remember the exact words of it, but there she is there. And she was the first direct descendant of Selwyn to go to Gallipoli. Woolshed at Koponga, built in 1926. And again, ferro cement. Shearing at Koponga. My father heading off with my two older brothers when they went off to Huntley. And I don't know whether that's me or my twin brother, but they were off to school. Mum and Dad on their wedding day. My father, of course, joined up for the Navy when the outbreak of the Second World War, and he actually ended up with his own command of landing craft. And there they are. Landing craft, I'm not sure which one is his, but it'll probably be at Palermo. I would think that's probably where it is. Unloading. The LTC's landing craft, one for landing troops and one for landing tanks. They could use them for either or. Oh, you know, we discovered that one of the commissions that my father had was to be sent over to New York to bring landing craft back from the States over to the... And obviously they enjoyed a bit of nightlife in New York.
That's the most modest image.
I see.
Drafting sheep in the yards at Koponga in about 1953 or 54. Circular yards, and my brother that lives in Australia, when he went over to work in Australia, the Ag Department of Australia just designed a new set of sheep yards for this fellow, and he was very, very proud. He had these circular sheep yards, and my brother Michael said, "Oh, they're not new. My grandfather built circular sheep yards in 1910. My father classing wool. Something which I carried on doing, and I classed my own clip. I had my wool classing ticket. Just a general view of Koponga, taken from an aircraft. This is Lane Road over here, Koponga in the middle, looking at Tomato Peak. There's Koponga, that's 1950s. In actual fact, it is prior to 1950. It is prior 1936, and I know that because the sun porch here is opened up, and that was enclosed in 1936. And that photograph was taken by Pete Van Ash, and it was the precursor to aerial mapping. Pete went around the district taking photographs of old homes and went around then selling them to people. And there's the old cow bale down there, used to milk the cows. But there it is. So that's pre-1936, but to date it exactly, I don't know. My mother, twin brother, and two older brothers. Me and my dear late Kathy on our wedding day. Chambers family, last family, the whole Chambers family had together. Christmas 1972, obviously with one brother living in Australia, it didn't happen very often, but Michael and his wife were out here and we all got together for a family Christmas. Repairs and maintenance, looks like a bomb site. That's when Kathy and I did the kitchen up. My parents had already had one crack at it, and we had to get an engineer's report, knock a wall out, and we rebuilt the kitchen. And then I know about 10 years ago we painted the house again, and it was a major. Took one bloke 12 months to do, did it on his own, and that's one day later. We won't show you too many photographs of what we did and didn't do. People from Oshia mightn't have been very impressed with us, but we won't worry about them. But there it was a major task. Well, that's Kathy and Kathy's little dog, Baxter.
What about the story of Jack Russell?
Oh, wasn't that Jack Russell? Oh, I'm just going to have a lean. 5 weeks ago, I was lying in Royston with a new knee. We've done Art Deco tours for a number of years, and one of those things, old historic home, I guess, and we've been very happy to open it up for people to come and enjoy. Because it was a Louis Hay home, etc., and everyone was doing Art Deco and Louis Hay, they used to come out to Koponga. In fact, they came out last year, I think. Was that? They did one this year. And we have this Jack Russell named Jack. And I was giving the talk about the history of Koponga on the front lawn, and these people had all come out decked to kill everything, all the bells and whistles for the Art Deco era. There's one very attractive lady that had the most beautiful fox fur. And old Jack's waltzing through and he wanders up to this woman and she bends down, "Oh, you're a nice little dog." Jack says, "No, no, bugger you." Bang! And he's got the fox by the tail. And she stands up, "Naughty little dog, naughty little dog, let go." Well, Jack eventually let go with about 3 centimetres of the fox's tail. And some bright wag yells out, "What's next for entertainment?" Yeah. It was a hired fox fur, he hired it. So, anyway, the old docking scene, I think anyone that's farming here knows all about docking. But there we are, docking in Copeland. The last grand parade, and one of my friends took that photograph and gave me a bit of stick about it. I was very much a junior boy in the A&P Society, and that happens to be Miss New Zealand and the runner-up. That's me and the four, Kathy and Hannah and Kate and Sarah at Kōkonga. We're at the cars, the old Rolls Royce, which I tried to buy it from my brother, but my father wouldn't let me buy it off him, otherwise I think the Rolls would still be in the family. An interesting story, my father was always very keen on old cars. Fast cars, had a 3038 Vauxhall, he had one of three Bentleys, the 4-litre Bentleys. Yes. The Bentley, that's the Vauxhall. The Bentley was one of three that were built specially to race at Silverstone. It had a 60-gallon fuel tank, so they didn't have to refuel during the race. There it is. Sadly, it ended up in Christchurch, and the fellow had pranged it and got himself killed in it. But the old man acquired the Rolls Royce. He had a little Singer Sports, which I think Ewan's got a photograph somewhere. There it is, the Singer Sports, and he was in Tourist Motor Company, as it was then, and he was a Rolls Royce, and the old man thought, "Oh, wouldn't mind that car." So he got £120 for the Singer, and he paid £230 for the Rolls Royce. The other one, of course, is an Austin Shearline limousine, which my father bought new, is still in the family. Dad always boasted it cost him 4 bales of wool. It was £2,000, which was a very expensive car in 1951. But there it is. And that was one taken when Hannah was about 8. And that's my grandmother to 1926 Minerva that she had. Yeah. And then one of the modern cars, that was my mother's little A30. My first car was a mini station wagon. Along with all the good and the bad things in Hawke's Bay, of course we do have to endure droughts, and that's just the typical drought scene of Hawke's Bay. We also have our fair share of the other side of the coin with storms and snow and hailstorms and all that sort of thing. As something better to do, I went and drove buses for Gannett Safaris, and Kathy was the tea lady, and we were known as the bus driver and the tea lady. And just a little amusing story about the bus driving in Art Deco. I had done a Friday trip out to the Cape, and the Saturday morning we had this historic homes tour, and of course there was a lovely couple from Auckland, and I was chatting them freely, just he was either bus driver, and the next day they were on the bus tour to come up to Kōkonga for the historic homes tour, and I was doing my story about Kōkonga, and this woman kept looking at me, and afterwards she came up and she said, "Excuse me," she said, "weren't you our bus driver yesterday?" And I said, "I'm a jack of all trades and master of none." I do have my, yeah, we do have some amusing times. Just a general view of Kōkonga, taken when the bougainvillea was out in full glory. And as you can see there, the sun porch on the right-hand side's been enclosed. In February, we celebrated 100 years of Kōkonga. Although grandfather had taken over the farm in 1909, we decided that Hawke's Bay better celebrate, or I better celebrate, Hawke's Bay's first privately owned reinforced concrete residence. Not the first concrete residence to be built in Hawke's Bay, obviously. The County Hotel was one and there were several others, but it was the first private residence built in Hawke's Bay. So there we are. Chambers family on the steps at the centennial. Mark Chambers on a horse. We did a little bit of a stint. It was Mark's idea, and I had to think twice before, because I had to put a plan in place, but we actually got a bugler in, and we played the last post, and as a tribute to my grandfather, Mark rode over the front paddock up onto the tennis court, dressed as a 1914 trooper. Don't know why Ewan's put that. He must have been getting shorter photos. And that's me just sitting in the garden at Kōkonga.
So, Neil, happy to answer any questions?
I'll try.
What does Kōkonga mean?
That's a very interesting question, and even Ewan can't find that out. Somebody might be able to tell me, but I assume that it's to do with the name originally came from the pa site, but how it got there or what, I wouldn't know. But, I mean, the pa was always known as the Te Kōkonga pa.
Neil, how did the homestead fare in the 31 quake?
No, it fared actually very well, and my grandfather did a lot of research into reinforced concrete before he built the house, and when he got up into the roof and some of the photographs we've got, there's a heap of steel in it. And I had a chat with Martouche, Guy Martouche in Napier, and apparently depending on which way your house is facing and how the reinforcing's done, and he's seen the photographs, had a lot of bearing on whether they stood up or not. But one of the problems with the house is that we've got what they call concrete cancer, and unfortunately there's not a photograph of it there, but it's where you get hair cracks in the concrete, water gets in, the reinforcing rusts and blows the concrete off. And when we did the house up, I spent only 3 weeks knocking bits of concrete off and getting back to bare reinforcing, and then having to brush it all down, treat it all, and then we had to get a plasterer in to replaster. So yeah, I mean, it's got its drawbacks.
What would the reason have been that he built on concrete?
I don't know whether he was worried about fire or not, which of course is why the rest of the Chambers family built in ferro cement or ferro cement and brick, because Kopong had just been completed when Tauroa, of course, was burnt down. And I know that my great-grandfather said, well, we're going to have a house that won't burn down. And there's a story related by my father that there was a fellow trying to sell fire extinguishers, and Kopong Road was a very new road at the cemetery, and he said, where's that going? And the bloke said, oh, it's a joker building a great big house at the top of the hill. Oh, I'll go and see if he wants some fire extinguishers. And he said, no, you're wasting your time going up there. He's got it from Almighty God that his house won't burn down. Anyway, this fellow did. He trundled up the road and then discovered that there was a house built of ferro cement and left very disgruntled with my grandfather. Not amused. He's trying to sell him fire extinguishers. But anyway, in actual fact, we did have a serious fire when I was very young in the kitchen. A refrigerator caught fire. And if it hadn't have been for the fact that it was a concrete house, it probably would have been burnt down. And ironically, my father turned the refrigerator into a smokehouse, which eventually did catch fire and destroyed a woodshed and a firewood saw and all that sort of thing. Yeah.
Neil, can I just thank you very much? Not only an interesting history of the farm and the property, but a family history as well. So thank you so much. Well, firstly, for the care that you take of the property, because it's part of our Hawke's Bay and our New Zealand heritage. Thank you for sharing your story with us tonight. Could you all join me in thanking you?